Welcome to this episode of Saintly Witnesses. On this particular episode, I got Kevin Nye on, who's going to come on and share a little bit about his passion for advocacy in the topic of homelessness and those who are experiencing like housing insecurity, and how he advocates and writes on their behalf. So I'm really looking forward to hearing a powerhouse in the Christian community and like a real expert on this topic. So thank you for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Thanks for that lovely introduction.
Yeah, for sure. So I guess naturally, if I had anybody on who was an expert on a topic, I would love to know, share a little bit about your background in this domain. How'd you get introduced to it? Providing advocacy and services to those unhoused.
Sure. So I was raised in the church. And for a long time thought that I was going to be a pastor. I went to school for that, both undergrad and then to seminary. Along the way, I did some internships with churches that had a big, a big aspect of their work was ministry to unhoused people. At the time, I was involved in those things, but I didn't really see that as my trajectory. But it is noteworthy, sort of in hindsight, that that was kind of a recurring pattern that was emerging in my life. And then when I finished seminary and it was sort of time to like move into the career, aspect of ministry, a whole lot of different things all sort of pointed to that my future wasn't going to be in a kind of traditional church, pastoral type setting. And I was living in Los Angeles at the time and, wanting to pivot to work that, mattered in my community and served the most vulnerable in my community, made sense to sort of move into homelessness. And I had a friend that worked at a place in Hollywood that was hiring and kind of bing, bang, boom, started working there. And that was about 8 years ago now. And so my first job was at this nonprofit called the Center in Hollywood. And my role was really just to learn names, build relationships, and help kind of hold space in a what was essentially a drop-in community space for people who are experiencing homelessness in Hollywood.
Okay, that sounds real good. I read in one of your interviews that you mentioned, like in traditional Christian spaces, the topic of homelessness is something that's like skipped over and like neglected. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's uncomfortable. Where it's not neglected, it's talked about on sort of like a very surface level. And I've heard like really great liberation theologians like talk about this, where it's like, Christians want to sort of talk about helping the poor, but they don't want to talk about what causes poverty. I'm trying to think of the exact quote. It's one of my favorites. It's from Dom Helder Camara, who said, "When I tell them I want to help the poor, they call me a saint. When I ask why people are poor, they call me a socialist." And I think it's that sort of where the rubber meets the road, where church spaces get really uncomfortable, right? And so some of them will just avoid the topic altogether. Sort of avoid talking about poverty or treat it as this sort of other thing or this thing that's related to like people who do bad things end up poor, right? Sort of like make it an ethical or spiritual problem. And others will sort of just talk about it like, oh yeah, it's really sad that people are poor and we should help them by like giving them food and just very like kind of basic surface level things, but not be interested in sort of taking that next step, because that's where it starts to like really, cost a little something. It starts to get really, really heavy really fast.
Gotcha, that makes sense. I can see why many Christians would want to sidestep the issue. But according to you and like what you just laid out, it's so much more that can be done at like the root cause level versus like superficial, artificial aid. So homelessness has been around for like a long time. I can even think back to my degree in social work, like the whole house movement with Jane Addams and the founding of America and how colonial America deal with those impoverished and all that kind of stuff. So I'm wondering, I'm gonna shoot you some common myths that like perpetuated in our society regarding homelessness, and I want you to provide like the best succinct rebuttal or counterclaim to like
Sure.
these myths. So one that I constantly hear all the time is if we provide sufficient housing for homelessness, for if we provide sufficient housing, homelessness will just like end. What do you say to that?
So I actually mostly agree with that one, I'm gonna be honest. I do fundamentally think that homelessness is an issue related to housing. I think there's lots of other things that intersect with it. But it's the one thing that every, person experiencing homelessness has in common, right? Is that they don't have access to housing. And if there are other things that they're facing, I think some of which will probably come up as we talk more about myths, right? Those things are all a lot easier to address if somebody is sleeping inside versus sleeping outside and dealing with homelessness on top of all these other things. So I definitely think that if we were to, if we woke up tomorrow and there were like 7 million new units of affordable housing in this country, I think we would see homelessness probably would drop by like 90%. I think we would see still a lot of like folks who have maybe been on the street for a long time and who need a long, like a higher level of support. And I'm always an advocate of housing and like housing plus services. Yeah, the big thing is housing.
Okay, I like that approach.
That maybe wasn't succinct like you asked, but.
No, that's good. Your response is real good. Another myth that's commonly perpetuated is those that are homeless spend all their money on alcohol and drugs. What would you say to that?
Yeah, that's kind of what I was referring to a little bit in the previous question that, I don't want to say that there isn't a correlation or an overlap between homelessness and addiction or substance use or alcohol abuse, right? The rates aren't as high as people assume they are. They're a little bit higher than they are for people who live inside. But I think we also have to talk about the difference between correlation and causation, right? Or if we are talking about causation, which direction? Because I think the common version of that myth is the reason that they are experiencing homelessness is because they got addicted or they, have an alcohol problem and they spent all their money on it, which caused them to lose their housing. I've certainly heard stories like that from people. But way more often I've heard I started using or I started drinking after I became homeless because it's a lot easier to deal with the experience of homelessness intoxicated than it is to deal with it sober. And on top of that, the best data that we have suggests that the percentage of people experiencing homelessness who have an addiction to a substance or alcohol is around 50% at the highest. And so again, we're talking about half, which is nowhere close to what the myth is, which is just the assumption that it's everybody.
Okay, we're going to talk about data in the next question. So it's good that you brought that up. My last myth that I would like to touch on is if homeless people wanted to, they could pull themselves up on their own bootstraps. What do you think about that?
I think that is patently false. there are some people who are able to resolve their own homelessness, but it's because they were working with a lot more to begin with. This is one of those myths that like even if you think about it just for a little bit, it breaks down really fast, right? Because people will say, well, why doesn't he just get a job? Well, are you hiring? Would you hire that person if they don't have an address to put on their job application? Where are they going to plug in their alarm clock to make sure they make their shift in the morning? And you can just go down the line, right? Do they even have an ID to be able to scan for a job opportunity? All of these things that we just completely take for granted, the ability for somebody to like follow these sort of steps that we put in place as if it's just this clear, easy path out of homelessness. I think if any of the people saying that got put in that situation tomorrow, they would not be successful. And actually, when I do workshops on this, I've created this game, that's sort of like a board game that people play at their tables, to try to like navigate the system of getting from homelessness to housing. And I intentionally designed the game to reflect reality, and make it pretty much unwinnable. And everything that happens to you in the game is things that happen to people. And I found that for people, it's really eye-opening that it busts that myth of like, oh yeah, you just have to work hard and it's fine.
Okay, I appreciate you taking the time to answer some common myths. I mean, these aren't all of them, but these are some ones that are like very popular. So my next question I want to ask you is politicians, nonprofits, organizations, they've been like combating and going about addressing homelessness and providing aid to unhoused people for a long time, centuries. But I read in one of the articles that you wrote that a lot of these methods and practices that they implement are like flawed. So I'm wondering, what are some of your best evidence-based approaches to like attacking homelessness and providing services to unhoused people?
Sure. Well, one of them we kind of already talked about, which is this idea of focusing on housing as the first intervention, and then surrounding people with services after. For about the last century, we've been doing it the opposite way, where we said, if you're on the streets and you want to get to housing, you have to do this sort of step-by-step process where you come into shelter by becoming sober, agreeing to be in at this particular time curfew, follow all the rules. And if you prove yourself for 30 days, 45 days, 60 days, that you're good enough, then we'll graduate you to, you know, transitional housing and then independent living. And along the way, you're just constantly having to prove yourself and to not fail. And you have to be compliant with a particular treatment plan, maybe for your addiction, maybe for your mental health, right? But if you fail, you're back on the street. And so at the end of this, if you do all these things exactly right and nothing goes wrong, you're rewarded with housing. And that system just didn't work. Turns out if you expect people to fail and build a system where they have constant opportunities to fail, people will fail that system. And the worst part is, we'll blame the people for failing it rather than saying maybe it's the system that's the failure, right? Whereas what we've seen with housing first, by actually saying, let's bypass that whole prove yourself part, let's put people into housing and then surround them with the services that they need, it's extremely successful. It's been studied many times. Peer-reviewed studies show about an 80 to 90% success rate of people that are given housing first and then surrounded with adequate resources, that are driven by what the people say that they actually need. They're successful in ending their homelessness, in increasing their income, in basically moving forward in the direction that they want to in their life. The problem with that is that it requires that we actually have the housing. So that's what I was kind of speaking to earlier, where if we actually had a bunch of new affordable units, we could really make a dent in this thing because that's our big issue right now. The last study that I saw around affordable housing in the United States, I think it's from 2018, and it said that for every 100 individuals or families that qualify and need low-income housing, only 37 units exist. And so we are so far behind in need and having the housing stock that we need in order to do this method well. So it's sort of like we have the right method, but we don't have the housing infrastructure for it to be successful.
Got you. And I appreciate you sharing, a lot of the surveying the empirical data and providing like a summary of what's out there with your quick literature review. And that's definitely a good suggestion that people involved with policy should really get into about the housing and trying to make as much units and vacant properties and all this stuff and turn it into affordable housing for so many people that need it. So my last question revolves around your magnum opus that you like known for in Christian spaces. So you wrote the book Grace Can Lead Us Home, A Christian Call to End Homelessness. What influenced you to write this book, and what are some major things that you hope people walk away from when they read the book?
Well, I've always been a writer. That's just kind of been a part of who I am. And so when I started to do this work, leaving behind a more traditional idea of what ministry was and sort of focusing on the homelessness side, after a few years, it was like, I kind of want these two worlds to talk to each other, right? Because what I'm hearing in Christian spaces is not what I'm experiencing in the homelessness spaces. And but I think that Christians have a lot of opportunity to get involved and to sort of understand this issue better. And from a, Christian perspective. And so for me, I was like, well, I'm a writer. I know these two worlds. Think I need to write a book about this. And so I really, set my mind to that. And through a lot of help, a lot of luck, a lot of connections, was able to do that. And I'm very happy with the book and the reach that it's getting. I think what you hope anytime you write a book is just that people will read it and people will like it, right? People won't say that it stinks. But more than that, I think what I feel really proud of is that people are connecting with the book. And I'm getting some responses where it's like, oh wow, I didn't know any of this, and now I feel more equipped and educated. And I love those responses. The one that really surprised me, but that encourages me the most, is how many people have read the book and said, like, yes, thank you. This is what I'm doing, or this is what I've seen. This is what I've experienced. But nobody in Christian spaces has said it, this way, or that my book put words to their experience or validated the work that they were already doing, and gave them more tools to help, talk about their work and why they do it and why it's important. So yeah, I think that's been what's been so amazing for me is, I wrote the book sort of for somebody who's just coming into this issue completely from scratch to be able to understand it better by the end and be inspired. But the amount of people who are coming to this with years and years and even decades of doing this work and being grateful for the book to, kind of speak to and affirm them. That's been really special.
That's wonderful to hear. And I'm glad that you wrote something so powerful and transformative that's really equipping people with necessary tools and resources to better be change agents and ambassadors for Christ out in the world. So that's really good. So my question, last question I didn't prepare you for is a really fascinating question. One of my favorite albums is, I mean, you probably can't see it, but it's Led Zeppelin album. So With Stairway to Heaven, so many classic songs on it. Black Dog. I want to say it's like Led Zeppelin 4, but I could be wrong. So what's your favorite album, and why is it why do you love it so much?
Ooh. Oh man, you really did. You didn't prepare me for that at all. That's tough. I think I default a lot to Fleetwood Mac's Rumours album. It's another one with just a lot of classics on it. And I mean, the vocals, the instrumentals on that are just like are so great and so classic, but there's also so much like
Backstory
yeah,
behind.
there's so much drama, right? They call it rumors, right? Because like there were so many rumors, and there's still rumors today about like how it was recorded and how different band members were in different tumultuous relationships, and like you feel that come through, but not in a way that creates, that makes it bad. It almost like it gives it an edge. It gives it like sort of a like you feel more passion in it. Like even if that passion is coming from like anger or heartbreak or frustration, like it's there in the music. And yeah, it's just one of those albums.
Oh yeah, most definitely. Okay, I really love out Rumors. You love Rumors. I've said Led Zeppelin 4. Both good classic rock albums. Well, Kevin, I definitely appreciated your time, and I appreciated you sharing just a little portion of your story. And may the work that you do continue to grow abundantly and fruitful in the spaces that you join. So thank you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me and for encouraging me today.
Yeah, for sure. And you guys continue to pray for the work that Kevin does and support his work as he tries to get the word out about ending homelessness and providing resources and services to those that are unhoused. And you can tune into the next episode of Saintly Witnesses.